Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Lanterne Rouge Cycling Podcast, presented by Join Cycling for the UAE Tour Stage 4, a big sprint stage, our second sprint in the first four stages from Dubai Police Officers Club to Dubai Harbour. It's Pancake Flat. They go south, southeast up to Al Qudra Cycle Track and then back up into the city. This stage doesn't have really crosswinds because it's so much in the city, protected by infrastructure and not out in the desert on the big highways exposed to the wind. And so what was the stage, Benji, where Philipson walked his bike when he got off his bike in the headwind?
I actually don't know which stage that was. It was a pretty similar stage because we also had the big highway. Then again, every single one of these stages has the big highways, but there were excessively big highways on this stage with like seven lanes. I was like, mate, the amount of cars that I would expect to ride in this area, I don't think that fills this entire highway, but that's just my humble opinion.
Just one more lane, bro, please.
It felt like that. But I don't know if that's the same exact stage or not. But to be honest, when it comes to the stage, I wasn't expecting Echelon, so I put my alarm with about 15K to go, unless someone started shouting in the messages, crashed by someone, or something happened. So I didn't get those messages. I only know that there was a breakaway early on in the stage, and that breakaway included, once again, Mark Stewart, who took the points, then dropped back to the peloton, and left Harm van Hoeke, who was the other rider in the breakaway, solo up there. So Harm van Hoeke was the solo adventurer from that point onwards, and eventually got caught by the peloton, who then started riding at an excessively slow tempo compared to usual, to the point that I felt like the stage was going to end an hour earlier, but it clearly didn't. So it came to the point that we had a run in towards a sprint, and I gotta be honest, outside of the breakaway, I don't think anything of note happened before the last 3 kilometers.
Just the goat from Dundee, Stewart, yeah, plugging away. That's really the highlight of this stage before that, because He's been in the break every single day successfully, although I'm not sure many other teams had the appetite to even go in the break. But you can tell, like, when I saw them catching Van Hoeke early and I saw the average speed today was 43 already, 42 and a half instead of 47 of the other stages, I was like, they're going to go even slower because there's no breakaway. Why would you push?
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty slow stage today. I would say if you weren't on the front, you were detraining, frankly. Like, maybe you got to do an extra workout
question
as well.
Would you say that the tempo that the peloton was doing during the stage before the last 25 kilometers, that you would be able to follow the peloton in this stage?
Yes.
I think my issue would be the not being used to riding in group.
I can't wouldn't be able to do the neutral start. Maybe in the Middle East I could, but not in Europe. That's the thing. People are like, oh, you just start. No, neutral start, you get dropped. Even if you're like a decent, you get dropped. Like, they're not going slow in neutral start. But like when they're on the highway, if you just put me right at the back and have to do 100 watts, surely. And then when they actually start going far, I mean, maybe we're overestimating, but
I'm not sure I could, but I think the most important fallacy for me would be the actual like group positioning, not being scared in like a large bunch of riders, not knowing what's ahead of people. Cause I always find it scary that if you're like in 50th position, you got to trust everybody around you as well.
Yeah. Like first corner, when they go into town, I get dropped and that's see you later. So, I'm talking literally on the highway in a straight line. I could just stand at 100 watts, but, even out of the corners when they're going easy, they're going to take it faster than you. They're going to kick harder than you. You lose the wheel. See you later, amateur, loser, Lanterne Rouge, to answer your question. So, but yeah, it was that sort of stage. And speaking of like adapting, this is what I always think, right? This is part of the join read. If you send your riders to UAE, I really want to know from one of the exercise or the trainers, you send your riders to UAE Tour and say you send your rider instead to do to Mallorca, to Alicante, to altitude in Tenerife to prepare for, say, Paris-Nice coming up or Tirreno coming up. How do you manage for your GC riders I'm talking about, like Jay Vine, how do you manage that deload during the stages? Because, like, jokes about us aside, like, they are doing zone one for four hours, and then even in the sprint, the GC guys are not doing too much. Like, how do they manage that in their program when they have to do, like, a hard European-style race, which could have, like, you know, hard stages in two weeks? It's just interesting to me, and it certainly factors into riders selecting whether or not to do this race. Some riders can manage it well, like Yates, and they come back to Europe and they're still good in the hard stages. That's interesting to me. But speaking of adaptation, Join Cycling is the best adaptive training plan or platform on the market. I know that firsthand. I had a little bingle on Saturday, touchdown. Not too bad. I don't need all your sympathies. That's fine. But thanks for all your well wishes, flowers, etc. But the perfect thing about Join was I just put in mid plan. I'm in my classics plan for our Flandrian challenge in about, well, it's 20 days. I just checked on the app then. It's 20 days till the go day. Just put in. Just had a crash or injured. I need 3 days recovery. Bang. The plan puts it in there and then adapts the plan going forward for the next 20 days to get me to the best level that I can be in, noting those circumstances and that reduced availability for our big dance in the middle of March. And that's why just it does it automatically. Don't have to call anyone, email anybody, wait for anyone to be available. Does it automatically. You can still, like I did today, 45 minutes, very easy on the trainer to keep me going and just to keep my calories in check. And that's why this is now the second Join Cycling plan I've used. I used the recovery or get back to fitness plan is how I used it in January when I was back in Australia. First plan I'd completed in like 5 years. And now my second plan is going really, really well. So I'd encourage you to go check it out. Sorry, Benji, shut in.
How have your crashes impacted your training? As in, have you had to switch back to the recovery?
No, plural. One.
You looked like you had multiple crashes.
Well, I mean, it was a continuum because you hit the ground and then I slid for quite a way. So I guess maybe in that sense I did. But yeah, it adapts to that. I guess there's also a readiness score you can put in. So that just got rolled out, that new feature. If you have something like a Whoop or a smartwatch that tells you your HRV, or your readiness scores or something like that, you can put it into Whoop Join Cycling. They rolled that out last week, and so even if I say I come back and I'm still a bit sore, I can put that in, and then the plan will adjust based on that as well within the app automatically. So I encourage you all to check it out. Free 30-day trial for Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast listeners. It's good to see so many of you have signed up and are enjoying using the training plan on Join. So if you haven't already, go and check it out. But okay, that's a lot on training plans, Benji. Let's talk about this sprint where nothing happened, except it's the same, well, until 5Ks to go. Don't you think all the sprint teams are trying to play it smart and they're trying to come up really, really late, like Bora, and they got burned today?
I somewhat agree. As in, we've seen teams adapt to that same strategy. We've seen Alpecin do it a few times in the Tour de France last year as well. As in, they also kept riders too late because they don't want to be at the front with full 5Ks to go. Even with 3Ks to go, they don't want to be at the front yet. They want to keep their four or five riders to move up whenever they need to in like the last 1.5-ish kilometers to then hit the front. And with Bora, that was even later. But today, Bora indeed got burned because if you are with 3 kilometers to go in that second or third level of the peloton, that second or third part of the peloton, not at the back, not in the last half or anything, but like between 15% and 45% of the peloton, so many people are fighting for that position to then come over in waves by the end that it ends up leading to a squeeze. And that same concertina effect we mentioned in the past already then causes a crash. And this time around, it was with, I swear it was like just behind a 3K banner. So whoever was involved got lucky because half of the Bora train was gone. I swear I only saw one Bora rider after this point. I don't even know which Bora rider, but I don't think it was Welsford. I think Van Poppel was hindered in that as well. So Bora's basically out of the question from this point onwards. And some GC riders were involved as well. I think Vine was there, but also Valter. He's lost quite a bit of time, who as well?
Van Wilder was caught behind as well.
So those are multiple GC riders, but then again, I don't think they actually hit the ground. I think they were just hindered by the crash happening around them or in front of them. So they will have the 3 kilometer rule count, so they won't lose time in GC on paper. So unless someone put the 3 kilometer banner wrong.
Nah, they all got same time.
Yeah, it should be fine then. So we're looking at a sprint coming up, and with Bora gone, I felt like I was kind of looking for which team was going to pick it up. And then Alpecin hit the front. And Alpecin hit the front with like, was it 6 riders or something? My boy Henry Ulich in third position of the train at some point, and I was like, man's going to hit the front with like 2K to go. Was at the front then. Just a bit of an offset, fun story on the side. This has been a guy that's basically been a friend of me for like a few years now, and to be able to see this guy go from not being in an Alpecin-like team to being in the Alpecin Dev team to them being in the World Tour team of Alpecin now at his first World Tour race. I'm just so happy to see him, grow up, if that makes sense. But it's nice to see him in the head of the action with 3K to go in a race like UAE Tour. And he did his work in the Alpecin train. And that Alpecin train was actually the most prominent team in that, because I swear Coy was kind of being led by one Jumbo rider a bit in the distance. He doesn't have the best lead out here. We've mentioned it before. So it's all about trying to get him in a somewhat comfortable position. Melier, same thing with Bert van Lerberghe. I think Jakobsen also had only one rider that was trying to get him into a position. So it was all about Alpecin leading the charge and all the other teams trying to get their sprinter in the right position. And I feel like the Klein is very good at jumping from wheel to wheel, you know? And you called him a bit of a draft merchant as a joke the other time, but he's a great draft merchant, but he also has the speed in the end, you know?
Yeah, it's a skill to find the right wheel and to launch at the right time and to not be boxed in terms of getting consistent results. That's more important than having a 50 or 100 watt extra peak.
Yeah.
Like, okay, for actually winning the big, big race, maybe that's where that difference comes in. But for actually consistent results, like look at Groenewegen and Jakobsen. He beating them both in both sprints. Maybe I don't know the data correctly, but I'd be surprised if he had a higher 5-second peak than them. But his positioning, timing, everything's been better. And I'm not sure if Szilard was here. Maybe Szilard's just the GOAT leader. Plumas and Szilard are just the GOATs. I don't know. But the climb was very, very good. First I saw Coy being put sort of trying to find Merlier's wheel, and I thought that's risky because if he jumps at the right time, you're not going to come out of his wheel. And then Merlier was thinking of jumping, he said, after the end. Chimolai screams up the right. I thought, is that Gaviria? But it was Chimolai did a really hard lead out on the right. No Gaviria on his wheel. Cavs detached from Siritsa, don't know where he is. It's kind of a free-for-all, and we're waiting for Groves to jump. And like Groves, if you look at his record in the big bunch sprints, is not good. He's not as on the level of the sort of Merlier, Coy decline. He's not like those guys in the big, big bunch sprints. And Coy jumps early to the left-hand open side. And I think if he was tacking onto someone, it would have been fine, but it was just too early. I don't know, 200 to go. There was a wind. Yep. You could see from the flags, from their left shoulder to their right shoulder, and he went to the left barrier. And it's right to go to the barrier, but because he went to the left barrier, Merlier is getting a decent draft on his pocket just behind him on the right-hand side. So, he basically, Merlier jumps right there into that pocket. De Klein was following Coy up, and Merlier does what I think Philipsen did to Beanie or somebody in the tour last year.
Yep.
Just Merlier just swings and just De Klein has to like stop pedaling or he's going to get chopped in the barriers by Merlier.
He has to decline pedaling.
Yeah, he declined that option. And like listen, Merlier is probably faster anyway. But yeah, he takes that wheel from him, gets in the slipstream, comes out, and there can only be one winner from that point on. Tim Merlier wins his second sprint. Very, very impressive. Good timing. He's the fastest here. And declines second. Coy peters on his run, and he finishes third. And interesting who comes. The rest of the top 10 is really interesting to me. We've already got one Pro Conti guy in there, Decline. Fourth, previous Pro Conti guy, Anil Kofsky, on Cofidis. Then you've got Maresco, fifth. They've beaten Jakobsen, sixth. Van der Paar improves his 10th of the other day to seventh. The Lotto Destiny Neo Pro. I think he's a Neo Pro.
Yep.
Bauhaus, eighth. Gaviria, ninth. Oded Kogut, another Pro Conti rider, 10th. The Israeli young sprinter. He's quite good. He was good in L'Avenir last year and in other races. And that they're beating Bennett, Milano, Groenewegen, Groves, Cavendish, beating all those guys who are getting paid seven figures. So it's interesting.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. And yeah, you're right. Coy launched early, did a bit of a mini Gaviria, I would say. It's not a real Gaviria because Gaviria would do it at 250, 275 to 400 meters to go. But the thing also with Coy is that he indeed makes that decision to go to the left. And it's weird, right? Because if you're not experienced in sprints and so forth, your head would be like always going to the left to kind of hide from the wind behind the barriers or something. But like you said, if you then go to the right side, you would limit the ability of the riders behind you to come past you because they'd be having to come past you in the wind. And yes, you'd be sprinting in the wind as well, but it's kind of like you have to weigh out the options, you know? And I'm not sure going to the left side would have been the right decision here because it indeed gave Merlier the hiding he needed to come past. And that's also the hiding that then adds to the Decline also being able to pass Olaf Coy because he's also in the draft of those two riders then to come into second position. And you're right, first of all, Merlier once again, king on top. He's been sprinting so well this year. I think he's won four sprints this year already, two at the UAE Tour, and they've been impressive. And it's not the fact that he's winning that makes it impressive. To me, it feels like it's his intuition and his decision-making in the sprint itself. As in, there's been these moments where I was like, at this moment, Merlier is in a position where he needs to make a decision to stay where he is and risk being boxed in or launch or follow a certain rider. And every single time, I feel like he makes this the right decision. And maybe there's a tiny bit of luck involved, but I think it's mostly intuition and kind of experience of being in these sprints, knowing what could happen, and then being able to respond in the right way to those moments. And right here, I feel like he didn't launch directly. And Coy then launches directly from him and he follows Olaf Coy from that point onwards. And I feel like the decision... What, sorry?
Merlier baited him. He sprinted into Dilia or Barastet's wheel on Alpecin. And then I think Coy thought he was going to use that momentum to launch. And then Coy was like, I'm committed. I've already started. And then Merlier jumped. He baited him.
And that's also what makes it most impressive for me, you know, like that. Because with Philipsen, we always say, we know he has the speed. We know a lot of sprinters have the speed. And yes, it matters that a Philipsen is being put in a good position without spending as much energy as others because Alpecin gets him into that position. The thing with Philipsen is that he's so good at finding gaps that others don't and knowing when to respond in certain ways at certain moments in the sprints. So like that's been one of the highlights for Philipsen as well. And to see that in Merlier, something that I swear, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I felt like Merlier had more issues being boxed in, not making the right decisions at certain moments. And I think that that's been an improvement there in the same way that we've seen Coy improve a little when it comes to assertiveness in the last 2 years in sprints. And it's nice to see the progress of all these sprinters, but we got to have the conversation now. How close do we see that Merlier after all these victories this year to a 2023 Jasper Philipsen? Because we haven't seen Jasper Philipsen yet. He starts in the weekend at Omloop. And they've got sprints coming up. Tirreno, they're riding together against each other, of course. Classic Brugge de Panne. Scheldeprijs is going to be a good one. And Gent Wevelgem, if it is a sprint, which is still a big if. But I'm so curious to see
that finish, brother. Tell you that for free right now.
I think so, too. That's why I'm making it a big if. But I'm looking forward to seeing them sprint against each other, because I feel like Merlier is coming for the king right now. And so far, he ain't missing.
Yeah, but he can't go to the Tour. So I don't know if he's doing the Giro. So
I think they were looking at getting him one Grand Tour. He needs to ride a Grand Tour. It's a shame for him not to ride
Giro.
One.
He should do the Giro.
Yeah.
It's got flat sprints. And I don't know what. Who is Van Wilder doing GC or something? Alaphilippe and Asgreen tootling around, getting their contracts extended or renewed or offers. So yeah, I think he should do the Giro. It is interesting how he played these two sprints. And in terms of that progression, like, is he, because he's 30 or something, you think, oh, is he still learning positioning? Yeah, or he can't still be learning position. Maybe he is. Because
he started late, eh?
Yeah, relatively. He was doing Kermesses, right? And Alpecin picked him up.
I would also mention.
Don't know what that is.
But, he's doing Kermesses, just ignore the cyclocross.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not a bunch sprint in the UAE, is it? Anyway,
there's sometimes similar amount of sand.
He won both exactly the same way. There's like the ball of the triangle of the lead out. The road is so wide. There's still space left. He's positioned himself on the open side of that ball. Bert's positioned him actually quite well both times. Bert van Leeuwenhoek has positioned him on the open side of that ball, getting half draft. So you've got to be good. That's the thing. It's like not everyone can do this. Because half the guys, if you position yourself in half draft on the open side like that with the wind coming from your left shoulder, you're cooked and you can't sprint. Or your sprint will be rubbish. And you look at Groves, when he opened up, he went backwards. And then he's basically waiting for someone to jump. And stage one, it was the Colombians. Stage four, it was Coy. And then as soon as he sees someone going to give him the lead up, bang, he's good enough to get in the wheel and aggressive enough on the open side. Now, in Europe, it's difficult. There's more corners. The road is narrower. Riders are more tired coming into the finish. Perhaps it's not possible. But he's done it perfectly both times, and it's been very similar.
And on one end, you'd say Bert van Leeuwenhoek bringing him in like P10, from which he moves himself up from that point onwards. That's, in the eyes of someone that is analyzing the sprint, not ideal. But the combination is working, because Merlier does have that insight of moving up in the right moment. And then I look at so many other sprinters right now in that same peloton, and I'm thinking, Jakobsen joined DSM. Jakobsen himself is not great at positioning. DSM is not great at positioning a sprinter, at least in the last 1.5 years. And then you see that Jakobsen is nowhere in the run into the sprint and has to like move up himself as well, but he doesn't do that as elegantly as a Merlier does. And then he ends up finishing fifth, fourth. Those positions, because he starts from an uncompetitive position. And then when I think about, I don't know,
Groenewegen's nowhere.
I forgot he was at this race. But yeah, you're right. Groenewegen is nowhere. And thing with Groenewegen, I always feel like I have the similar opinion on him. We analyzed this at least in the Tour last year, where it was very obvious during that Tour de France that he struggled with the Alpecin leadouts, as in the Alpecin leadouts were so fierce that he arrived at the actual sprint and he was basically out of energy to sprint. And then when the stage had an easier run into the sprint, which I think was the Limoges stage, the Alpecin leadout wasn't in full force there. And right there in that stage, you notice that he had it easier to be in the right position and actually had a good finish.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And I feel like when it comes to these UAE Tour sprints, they are pretty damn hectic, but I also kind of expected him to be there, you know, because this is not Tour de France level. It's as close as it gets, but I don't feel like it's as fierce as the Alps and Lidos at the Tour de France.
No, it's much more like linear. They stay at the front and then they don't have They do have Rickards here, but there's no Vanderpool with like an explosion with Phillips. To your point, original question is, you know, Merlier versus Phillips. And I think Merlier's top end is faster. I think it is faster than Phillips. But that's not, sprinting is not all about that, as we've just discussed. It's about positioning and timing and gaps. And Phillipson's still quick. So,
But
in a straight line, if you had to put me on the spot, straight line, 10 seconds, who's quicker over 100 meters? I would say Merlier.
10 seconds? Ooh. Maybe. I think 10 seconds
after a hard
day.
Like if Koerner in a bunch sprint of 30 guys, Phillipson's fucking lethal. Like, you look at him in Roubaix, came second. So they're different riders.
I feel like Phillipson has a slightly higher acceleration in my head. So that's why I'm thinking 10 seconds, 15 seconds is a long sprint, hell of a long sprint.
Yeah.
But then I'm leaning very much Merlier. And it's like, I'm looking at both of these riders and looking at Tirreno and if Merlier actually outsprints Phillipson straight on multiple times in Tirreno, will people forget about that when judging the sprinter awards in November, October, by the end of the year, just because he wasn't at the Tour de France? Because that's a major hit not being able to ride it.
We won't forget.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe. Well, tomorrow's stage from Al-Akhar to Al-Quwain, 183Ks. There is a 7K 2% climb at the start of the stage. Maybe we'll see a break form that's more than just Stewart. I doubt it. this is the finish that Groenewegen actually won last year in UAE. So if he's going to bounce back for him, you would hope it would be tomorrow. Last year, he went, but the thing is, like, he went fifth the day before in Dubai and then won and then third the next day. So maybe he's just got to get it right. I don't know. Maybe he just got unlucky, but 21st and 17th in the two sprints. At what point? I'll save that question. Who do you like tomorrow, Benji?
I think Merlier in every sprint here is who I like for these sprints. But I'm curious about Echelons because this is a parkour that takes us, like, in my opinion, I'm looking at a map and it's sand colored, so I'm guessing there's a desert there.
Yeah.
Because it starts going through like the hill / mountains from the right side to the left side of the country. And it goes straight through a sandy place. So I'm guessing there's options for Echelons in that behavior, depending on... Because they also twist when it comes to angle a lot. As in, they go northeast, southwest. They go west from the start. Sorry, I had to figure out what direction it was. They go west from the start, then go southwest a tiny bit. And then in the last like half of the race, they decide to turn back before turning a U-turning back towards the actual finish line. So I feel like there is options for Echelons in this stage.
I think so, if the wind is right. In terms of technicality, there really is none. The last turn is at 5Ks to go, last right-hand turn, and then it's like it's a straight line with four roundabouts that I presume they'll be able to blast through to the north of the country in Umm Al-Quwain. So it's going to be a high-speed sprint, and it's not technical. So maybe it's good for Groenewegen. Maybe there's space for him to get moved up. But yeah, at what point do they switch Ewan and him at the Tour?
Well, I don't think Ewan would be doing much better. So I think they're...
You don't?
No, I don't. I think Ewan would be fall out of position at the UAE Tour.
Probably right. It's interesting though. Groenewegen is doing Paris-Nice. It would have been interesting if Ewan did Tirreno and Groenewegen did Paris-Nice, and like Ewan won a stage and was good in a couple of other, and Groenewegen continued this, then at what point do you change it around?
But at then what point is it too late to change it due to preparation?
Probably already too late, frankly, because they've already told them what they're doing. And Groenewegen was decent in the Tour last year. He had four top fives and five top tens, which was actually a lot of points. So he was pretty good in the Tour last year. So maybe he just needs some more racing fitness, more fitness in the legs. I don't know. Who I'm picking tomorrow, I'm going to go with Arvid Deklein tomorrow because Merlier chopped him today. and he would have won out of Coy's wheel. So I'm going to go with Arvid Decline. I picked a Dutch rider for today, and yeah, didn't get it done. Any other news, but, Benji, around the traps?
Wait. Who does the drafting merchant draft when there's no one to draft ahead of him? True. That's a real question.
Well, like, yeah, does he hit the wind and just evaporate? He just, like in the Avengers, he just disintegrates.
It's a theory.
I've not seen it disproved yet. I've never seen Arvid Decline in the wind. So I don't know. Like Schrodinger's cat. How can he win the race if Arvid Decline cannot be in the wind?
There has to be zero wind speed.
Yeah, it has to be something. Maybe the rider ahead of him wins but gets relegated, so then he wins, but he got to draft them all the way to the finish.
Yeah, and if there's no wind speed, then there's still like wind resistance because you're moving.
Monster Taylor. I don't know. But he's my pick for tomorrow. He's looked good. Declined. So maybe he gets it done for his biggest win so far. In other news, the Alaphilippe saga, not too much from the actual main protagonists, all being Marion Roos, Julien Alaphilippe, and Patrick Lefebvre, the French head of their riders' union gave an interview to L'Équipe, basically saying in any other industry, this would constitute employee harassment and you'd be able to file a complaint. Hard to disagree, I would say, with that. And then a bit in the gossip columns, but I'll mention it anyway. Philippe Gilbert's partner just had a very strange response to Marion Roos. What I thought Marion Roos' statement was pretty like middle of the road, I thought, which was like, can you just leave us alone? And she basically had a massive go at Marion Roos about criticizing riders on TV and then not being able to cop it, which is completely different, by the way. To have your employer criticizing you and Roos analyzing Roos' performance.
The exact words translated, you spend your life talking badly about people behind your mic hidden in your studio. It's like she's like a keyboard warrior.
Marion Roos is like the most public-facing person. She's on stage at the Tour de France presentation in front of 1,000 people in the audience and all the media in France. She's like, after Christian Prudhomme, maybe ahead of him, like public-facing person. She's on national TV. We're the keyboard warriors. It's my job. So yeah, that was. And I was like, you want to criticize performance? Philippe Gilbert took probably 7 figures or whatever from Lotto Destiny, got him relegated with his performances when he was under contract with them. And also, didn't he like promote another bike brand while he was like at the team as well? Just so like,
I think so.
Let's not play that game. Let's not play that game because everyone has bad periods.
I will say she deleted the Instagram reaction.
Oh, really?
Very swiftly, because I'm guessing that she realized it was not the right way to.
Maybe Gilbert was like, can you not?
Potentially. But hey, it's another file on the already dramatic discussion, I would say. I think I saw some pictures on, I think it was Laatste Nieuws in Belgium or something, that at the actual recon of Omloop or something this morning, Alaphilippe and Marion Roos, they were very nicely welcomed by the staff of Quickstep there. So I think there's like no bad blood between actual staff. Like,
yeah, I don't think
Wilfried Peters and stuff.
I don't think he has beef with Marion Roos. Like, he's probably like, holy shit, I have to drive the car and direct these guys for opening weekend in 36 hours.
Mate, some people were expecting that like cat meme where Wilfried Peters is the person like trying to roast the cat, and the cat is like Marion Roos sitting at the table. Not happening.
Bizarre. What do you actually expect of Alaphilippe's level? Because I was doing this mental math yesterday, because I was thinking how much, because I'm a spiteful person. So like, if I was him, how bad could I be and still get a good contract next year? Like what's he got to do to still get $2 million out of Total?
We also got to add something that we haven't mentioned yet, that was also an update after what we said on the podcast yesterday, where Lefebvre spoke to Het Nieuwsblad, if I recall correctly, where he said the words that were said in Humo, the magazine that said it, were actually about 2022. So basically, this is indirectly linked to me, as in remember when I was in that Wolfpack documentary in November 2022 in Dichem in Brussels that was recorded? And apparently that same day was the day that Lefebvre took Alaphilippe aside and said the words that he re-said in that Humo magazine along the lines of "you're drinking too much, blah, 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 blah." So
yeah, he didn't apologize to Marin Roos.
Wait, I agree. He also added that since 2022 November, Alaphilippe hasn't touched a single drop of alcohol. I don't know why it's then...
How would he know that?
Allegedly didn't touch a single drop of alcohol. Why that was then reset again in that Humo article. Why he must have reset it in that interview then for it to come up in the article. But this doesn't excuse the Mario Rus part, nor the fact that he keeps on batting on about the Alaphilippe thing, if it's already fixed in his own words.
Exactly, if he's been an exemplary teammate.
He hasn't stopped training, it said.
For over a year, then. This is 14 months, he's been exemplary. Why would you bring it up?
And, like you said yesterday, and we've brought it up a few times already, the year that it's about is 2022. Strade crashed, LBL crashed, Brabantse Pijl got hit by his own team car, came back one in the Tour de Wallonie in front of Aramburu, which I'm still really sad about.
Flogged him on the half.
And then had COVID, and then came back for the Vuelta. Apparently was pretty good in form going into the not selection of the Tour de France.
I'm pretty sure Lefebvre thinks he could have continued after that crash. Well, maybe he slid out in the Vuelta?
Yeah.
On that random corner? I reckon Lefebvre thinks he just packed it in so he could get ready for Worlds.
Yeah, but all this together, he was injured 75% of the year. What the fuck are you expecting from a rider that's injured 75%? And if it's then fixed since November 2022, then all we're talking about is 2022.
And also, like, he's endless prayers. That run-in where Gegenhardt and Sivakov crashed on stage 9 of the Vuelta, Alaphilippe was unbelievable for Remco. Like, he's a good teammate. At least from what I can see. But yeah, my point was, yeah, what do you expect from him? He was pretty good in TDU. Some say he won that stage on Wollonga, depending on where you draw the finish line.
That's a stretch.
Some say. The Wollonga denialists may believe that Alaphilippe won that. But he... Like, is he really going to get dropped in the hills in Kerner? Would you be surprised if he was in Group 1 with Wellens, Moric, Vismas?
I would not be surprised, to the point that Sporza has this kind of fantasy game that I always make like a team for, and then one day later I forget I have that team. Today I haven't forgotten yet because I added a 6 million euro Alaphilippe in my selection this time. Because
where
there is a chance.
Rank? Like, is that expensive?
It's 1 million less than Merlier, and it's about... No, for like, the races are the main classics, but also Brenne Kokseide in Okere Kurse.
Oh, come the fuck
Lissamet. We've got the big deal here.
They do that for those races, all included.
But
I shouldn't bad
basically
about them. We're going to one of them.
The minimum is 2 million. So he's 6 million, and we're talking about Van der Poel is 12 million, roughly. And Van Aert.
They're the same price.
Yeah.
I guess Van Aert does more of them, right? So he's doing opening weekend. I need to look into this scoring system. Obviously, I crush Velo games. Can't be stopped.
So I selected Alaphilippe. So I have some hope that he might do something.
I do too. Like, why would he just get a straight drop? Maybe he's washed. I don't know, but maybe...
If it's raining?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Summer rider. But if it's not raining, it sure looks cold and wet this weekend. But yeah, I think... I can't see him winning Flèche and the opening stage of the Tour de France, right? In Italy. I can't see that coming back.
No.
First, and he's not going to the Tour, so that would be difficult to win if you're not on the start list, as I always say. But if he wins a Dauphiné stage or a Swiss stage, comes fifth in Flèche, isn't that good enough for a team to still give him the bag? I think so. Based on Sagan. Fulsang. I think so. Anyway, our last thing was a Sturven interview. I'm not sure if you read it this morning, Benji. Just speaking of the Classics week. We're in the Classics week. It's about the Classics this Saturday.
Yeah.
It was by colleague Bram van der Gabelle.
Yes.
I know he tweeted it. He does good. He actually does exclusive interviews and content. Like he did a lot of bike stuff. Anyway, he did, it's in HLN, I believe. You go check that out. Sturven was talking about, he said he got Read the Riot Act at the end of 23 in America by 7 people at a round table for his level in the previous year or two. Are you surprised that that happened? Do you think it should have happened? Like, I'm not surprised it did happen.
I'm not surprised it happened, but I also think it's not solely Stuyven's fault. As in, I also think the team management is partially responsible for the tactics that they employ, and some of the tactics just were weird with the riders they had. If you have Pedersen and you have Stuyven, you tend to use them different than the way they did in certain races. And for example, if it's about the last 2 years, then we're also including Gent Wevelgem, where he was in the top four, but he was riding in the group with Binyam, with Christophe Laporte, where he definitely wasn't going to win the sprint, with a group with Pedersen behind. That kind of situation, I don't blame him solely for that. That's a team car's fault that Stuyven keeps riding with Binyam and Christophe Laporte, that he doesn't know that he's going to get beat there. It can be himself overestimating himself a bit, but also the fact that it's not clear that Pedersen is the clear leader in that situation. I feel like that's the kind of thing I'm looking at. Top 10 at Paris-Roubaix in 2022, top 10 at Brugge de Panne, top 10 at Roubaix is a good result, 7th in my opinion, but then I look at, he just didn't ride as many classics as I expected them to. 10th at Omloop, 15th at Kuurne. Those are decent results, but why is Trek expecting this man to win every bloody classic? He won a fluke Sanremo.
This is who he is.
He's a rider. He can only win riding away from a group in the last 10 kilometers through group dynamics. And that's a fucking great way to win. That's how you won Kuurne. That's how I won Milano Sanremo. A great palmarès.
Or against a very bad sprinter like Lampaert in Omloop in 2020. He won a sprint, did you?
Possibly.
So he could beat Kung maybe in it, but like his sprint is not that good. Like compared to the Door or Beanie or Delee, his sprint ain't that. So this is what a continuation of the Lefebvre thing, Benji, where I'm like, I'm looking at the team here.
Yeah.
You won the monument. You then probably extended him as a monument winner. That doesn't mean he's a monument winner.
Exactly.
Value-wise.
Well, I agree. As in, the repetitiveness of him winning a monument is not huge when it comes to Stuyven. It's still a rare chance, which... He's a great rider. He's got great results.
If Mads and him got made group one in Roubaix against isolated riders, it is possible.
Yeah.
Flanders, it to me, is impossible.
Yeah.
And so it's different. Monument winners are not built the same. If a guy goes to Tour of Flanders and drops everybody on the Kloppenberg and rides away to win, that's replicable. He's a freak.
Yeah.
And you pay him the superstar money. But San Remo, like you said, Søren Krah could have won. Or it's more of a lottery. Yeah. So. And listen, agents and the riders should go ask for the most money possible based on what they'll get paid. I'm not saying that's wrong, but then...
And I also feel like Stuyven probably got the most out of his career when it comes to the victories he has. Winning Omloop, winning...
He's got a nice
It was
career,
right?
Yeah,
winning Sanremo, winning a Vuelta stage. He was close at the Tour de France stage at some point. That's something he might still try to win. And I reckon it's not impossible to do that for Jasper Stuyven. But he's not... Who can we compare him to that he's not, for example? As in...
Is he much better than what Nathan van Hooijdonk was that last year? Honestly.
Not really.
Like, and who the hell was sit down with van Hooijdonk and be like, why didn't you win a podium monument this year?
Yeah.
And like, I'm that's not disrespecting Søren. I'm saying van Hooijdonk last year was fucking good. I'm just saying like, the palmarès really taints the previous wins, taint what people's perception should be of future wins. That being said, we've done a lot of defending Jasper Stuyven just then. He does say some things in this article, which I encourage you to read, where I'm like, they ask him point blank, do you see yourself and Mads in the same hierarchy in the classics? And he pretty much says, yeah. I'm like,
no,
come on, man. That ship has sailed. So
the likelihood of Pedersen winning is so much higher because there's so many different scenarios that Pedersen can win in. Pedersen can win in the scenario that Stuyven can win
he
in.
He can beat Van Aert and Laporte in a sprint.
Exactly. The sprint is there. He also has the quality to just simply ride people out of his wheel in Paris-Roubaix. That's not impossible. The likelihood of doing that to Van der Poel and Wout van Aert is limited, but it's not impossible if someone has a bad day or something happens. And with Stuyven, I feel like he's the kind of rider that I see in that team as Pedersen is the... Now they've got three riders, right? They've got Milan as the pure on like Andrew Abraham sprint option behind. Pedersen as the man that will try and get into grooves, but Stuyven is also one of the guys that goes into early moves, and I think Stuyven is a tactical play, as in you put him in groups to put pressure on other people and he can still win the race potentially.
Yeah. But it's just, I was curious to read that I was like, and listen, maybe we don't know what happened on it. Maybe he carries himself around the team like he's the superstar and gets paid like a superstar and wants to decide his schedule and his program and his training locations. And then they're like, hold on. Sorry, but you scored, you know, like average, I don't know, 600 UCI points, 700 UCI points the last 3 years. Oh, I was wrong. Less, more than that. But you know what I mean? Like, mate, we don't know how he carries himself around the team. But that was just interesting to hear. He's contracted through 20. Like, what next, Benji? You get Malcolm Ollermer in front of you in 2028 when he's 41 years old and say, why the fuck didn't you beat Poggi on Lombardy this year?
Well, to be fair, Mollema's contract is also one of those that, next to Fuglsang, or like one of the worst in the sport at the moment, together with, we don't know the money about the Mollema one, but I'm guessing the Fuglsang one money-wise has to be relatively high. Froome's obviously you can't beat the Froome contract. But I rate Mollema pretty high in that.
Yeah, Dylan Turn's also not flying either. Premier Tech, so.
Probably also not the highest paid, though.
I don't think he got that in 22, and
he just won Flesh, right?
He just won Flesh and sixth in Liège, eighth in Brabant, sixth in Flanders. And Rick Verbrugge was like, come here, buddy. Anyway, that was an interesting interview. Go check it out if you read Dutch or have access to it on HLN. But we'll be back with the sprint stage tomorrow, Gran Camino TTs this afternoon. It's not counting for GC, so we don't care. Josh Tarling should win that. It's on road bikes, though, so it all makes no sense to me. I know there's wind in rain conditions, but it's just very strange. What's happening? I don't really know how to take that. But until tomorrow's stage, ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.